This weekend at the Anka Intermediate School in Candler, the Buncombe County Young Democrats are hosting a nonpartisan panel and Q&A focusing on the opioid crisis. The panelists include Buncombe County Sheriff Van Duncan, Michael Harney from the WNC AIDS Project, Dr. Blake Fagan from Mountain Area Health Education Center, Jesse Smathers, the Director of Network Development for VIA Health, and Brian Turner, North Carolina House Representative for District 116. Representative Turner stopped by the Asheville FM studios to discuss the panel and how the opioid crisis is impacting Western North Carolina. Brian, thanks for joining me in the studio today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you inviting me.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this panel that's coming up this weekend about the opioid crisis in Buncombe County.
Sure. So it's been really no new news to say that we have a problem here in Buncombe County, Western North Carolina, North Carolina as a whole. And so part of this panel is to just help educate people about what's going on in sort of multifaceted way. It's what's going on. What is the crisis? What is happening? How did we get here? And then it's what are we doing from a law enforcement perspective? What are we doing from a public policy perspective and from a medical perspective to deal with this issue? Right. It's also going to include hopefully people asking some good questions and talking about what is it that they can do. What can people do in their everyday lives to help recognize when people are struggling with addiction, to help people get help, and to be able to make some of those grassroots improvements.
Tell me, when we talk about this opioid crisis, what are we talking about here exactly?
So I think the term opioid crisis has become kind of a catch-all. Mm-hmm. But really what we're talking about is the abuse of pharmaceuticals as a starting point. So we're looking at prescription pharmaceuticals, you're looking at OxyContin, you're looking at Vicodin, Percocet, all the stuff that when you tear your rotator cuff and you got to go get it fixed, that they're prescribing for you. And what ends up happening is that folks start there. And so, even things like I'm getting my wisdom teeth out, mm-hmm. and someone says, well, you know what, here's a couple of Vicodin or Percocet or whatever to help after the surgery. And then you get prescribed 30 and you need 3. Mm-hmm. And then it ends up in your medicine cabinet, teenager, family member, whatever, gets in there, or you say, you know what, I've had a bad day, I hurt my back, I'm going to take another one. And so there's an overprescription issue that's putting these pills out there into everybody's hands and making them readily available. And then the problem is that people get hooked because these are very addictive pharmaceuticals. And then once they run out and they can't get more, they switch over to basically street drugs, mm-hmm. looking at heroin, mostly heroin. We're seeing fentanyl now and some other serious narcotics. And so that's where it is. It starts very, very sort of innocently and what you would think is a very safe way, mm-hmm. with prescription drugs. But then the addictive properties of it just push you into these other areas.
Right. So where are we seeing the impact of this in our community?
So it's all across. These addiction problems have really spread across socioeconomic barriers. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about what you would think of being people living in middle class, suburbs areas of Asheville. Mm-hmm. You have high school students who got a football injury who now are hooked. You've got a carpenter who maybe hurt his arm while on a construction site who's getting hooked. So we're seeing it across the board.
Right.
Definitely, we're seeing pockets of it in certain areas. I know that some parts out in Candler have seen some real issues out there that Sheriff Van Duncan has been very good about addressing. But it really, addiction does not discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're really seeing that with this. And I think the one thing that's really interesting about the opioid crisis and the addiction problems is that because it has crept into the middle class or upper middle class households, now we're seeing the push to really fix it.
Right.
So now it's doctors and lawyers and accountants and it's track stars, and it's not just a problem for folks who don't live in my neighborhood that we're starting to see a lot more traction.
What's really changed to to bring this into everybody's consciousness more so than it might have been a year or two or three years ago?
So there's a great book called Dreamland, which talks about the confluence of the opiate prescription issues and the pill mills, and that confluence with the black tar heroin trade from Jalisco, Mexico, I think it is. And so this book really sort of documents how this came to be. The way that it kind of entered was this concept in the medical area that pain became the fifth vital sign. And so doctors were really having to look at pain and pain management as a fifth vital sign, along with things like respiratory rate and pulse and things. So whereas before it was kind of on the sideline a little bit, now it brought pain management front and center. And then with opiates, we had this really easy way to treat it, to deal with this fifth vital sign. So that was back in the 80s, and that's what started to kind of bring this idea of pain and pain management to the forefront. You combine that with some aggressive marketing on the part of pharmaceutical companies, some studies and comments from medical journals that were taken out of context, and all of a sudden you feel like you have these pills, these magic pills that have no side effects, that have low addiction rates, that can solve this problem that the medical community has said is a major issue to deal with because it's a fifth vital sign. And so I think that's part of what really brought this forward to us. So it's not really any one factor. Right. It is all these things coming together for this perfect storm. And we're now really just sort of reaping. We're really almost in second generation addiction at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's had a problem on the national level, because we've had an increase in overdoses, I believe, again, Sheriff Van Duncan would have more updated numbers, but something like 47 overdose calls in the month of January for the Sheriff's Department. That's just Sheriff's Department.
Yeah.
That's not APD. That's not EMS or fire. That's just Sheriff. And so you're thinking the Sheriff's getting at least one call a day for an overdose. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah. What are you hearing from folks? I know you do town halls and you're out in the community and in the district talking to people. What are you hearing from folks as far as what they're looking for from you or from Raleigh or from the Sheriff's Department?
Help.
Yeah.
There are folks who are dealing with addiction themselves or in their families, and they want help and access to resources. We have a number of substance abuse centers here in Buncombe County and Western North Carolina. Unfortunately, the vast majority of them are private. Mm. And so economically, they're out of reach of many folks. We have the AID Act, the JFK AID Act, out in Black Mountain, which is a state facility which serves the Western region. And so that's been some place that people could go who don't have the resources, or that their insurance is a slow reimbursement, they could get access there. Unfortunately, ADAC just got a $2 million budget cut. And so that's been a real challenge. But that's one of the things people are looking for. How do I get access to resources? And then there becomes a preventative piece. So how do I, if I've got a teenage kid, how do I identify when they may be on this path? And so trying to figure those kinds of things out. And then, there are a lot of folks who on the law enforcement side, they want the sheriff and the police department to deal with this. They're tired of walking down their street and seeing needles on the sidewalk or in the ditches. And they want people locked up. And there is a place for incarceration, but that's, we're not going to arrest our way out of the problem.
Right.
So that's one tool, but that's not the only thing we have. But I think that's what people are looking for. How do I get help for myself or someone in my family? What can I do preventatively to keep people in my family from getting hooked? And what's law enforcement going to do to help protect our communities?
Right. So we really need comprehensive solutions. And I would imagine that folks that are experiencing this issue in their lives or in a family member's lives, they're everybody probably has a certain idea that they think can fix it, but that might not necessarily be, you know, a one-size-fits-all sort of solution. As you said, we can't arrest our way out of the issue.
Right. Yeah. And there's been a lot of controversy over the use of Narcan, providing emergency workers or even individuals with Narcan saying, well, you know, if I give you Narcan, which is the drug that's used to basically, it blocks the opioid receptors right. in the body, and if you've overdosed, it basically reverses the overdose almost immediately. It's you know, people refer to it sometimes as a Lazarus drug. Mm-hmm. There's a concern that by giving access to Narcan, are we encouraging people to use, because they can do so knowing that if they've got somebody with them, they can bring them back.
Right.
And that has been, there were a couple of early reports about people trying to push the edge. How far can I take my dosages, and I can have someone there with Narcan to save me, so
right.
I can find the limits. But I don't think that's really not widespread.
Yeah.
There's no data to support
that's the exception. I would imagine.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And the problem you run into is that we've got to look at this problem for what it is, mm-hmm. which is a medical problem. When folks are addicted, it's not a moral failing. It is a chemical, it's a body chemistry right. issue. Some folks, it's just like anything else. It's just like some folks are more prone to cancer than others. Some folks get sunburned easier than others. Some folks get addicted a lot easier than others. And so when we recognize that addiction is a body chemistry issue and a disease, then maybe we'll stop treating people who have been addicted or abused drugs as people of low moral value.
Is there opportunities at a local level from the school standpoint for providing this kind of education, starting at that level? Is there any discussion of that? Or how do we get that message out to people where, because it is sort of probably a generational thing. There are certain beliefs that are held, you know, by certain generations, and you need to maybe not change minds, but start, you know, at a younger age or something.
Well, I think the first step, and this is something that is actually in the STOP Act, in the opioid legislation that was passed this year, that strengthens the prescription writing and tracking,
mm-hmm.
which is really key. And I think this is where the medical community has a large role to play. If we're no longer looking at pain as the fifth vital sign. And you as a doctor are not going to get in trouble for under-prescribing pain medication. If I can sit there and say, you know what, you just had your wisdom teeth out, really, you know, 1,800 milligrams of ibuprofen mm-hmm. is enough. I don't need to give you a codeine-based whatever.
Right.
That I think, is the first step. The appropriate dispensing of these pharmaceuticals, keep them out of people's medicine cabinets. That's one thing. More aggressive sort of turn-in programs. You know, law enforcement did a lot of, you know, gun buyback
yeah.
type stuff. You know, I would really like it if, you know, in the future, and this is me just sort of spitballing
sure.
a little bit, you know, what if CVS gave you a return envelope that said, when you're done with your medication, you can drop this mm-hmm. You can drop your meds in this envelope and it'll ship right back to us. And we'll dispose of it for you.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there are some things we can do to keep those prescription drugs limited to the people who need them in the dosages they need them.
Right.
You do run into problems where people say, "Well, listen, you know, I can't get to the doctor every week to re-up my prescription.
Right.
I need 30 pills." I think there are ways to work on that, and the STOP Act addresses some of those issues as
yeah.
well. But controlling access to those pills is the first step, because then that's the hook that leads to the heroin usage, the fentanyl usage, things like that. So I think that's one thing that we can do. When you talk about educating people in schools, I don't think it's too early to educate kids.
Mm-hmm.
We teach kids from a very, and I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and you know, at a very young age, we locked our undersink cabinet
mm-hmm.
because she was too young to know that maybe she shouldn't put that Ajax in her
right.
mouth. But when she got old enough to know, We told her, don't put that Ajax in your mouth. And so I think that you can that can be a carry-on type of education. You don't put Ajax in your mouth, and you don't put medication that's not yours
right,
in your mouth.
Right.
So I think that, you know, so you can start there. Then you move into the schools, and you can talk about, you know, when I guess when I was a kid, we had the DARE program.
Yeah.
We were just saying no. And so, you know, finding a good sort of reboot to some of those education programs that are relevant, that are honest. I think sometimes when we look at some of these programs, whether it's sex ed and abstinence
right.
only, that the sort of the just say no doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And it also sets up a it also sets up a binary where, well, if I didn't just say no and I ended up saying yes, now I'm lost.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And so. How do you find a way to make it a better program? But
right.
I think educating kids early on, elementary school, I do not think, you know, my daughter's going to be in fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had these conversations already. I would not have a problem with her school having that conversation
yeah.
with her.
Right. So you mentioned the STOP Act a couple of times, and that was, you were a co-sponsor of that, and that was just passed in this session and signed by the governor before the session was over at the end of June. So tell us a little bit about some more about what's in that STOP Act and how that addresses these issues.
It was a great bipartisan effort.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, just to let folks know, things can happen in a bipartisan fashion when there are issues that are really impacting our community. And I know that Attorney General Stein really worked hard in promoting and pushing this across the state. Governor Cooper obviously was a big fan and signed it. I was fortunate enough to be invited to the bill signing ceremony, which we did in the old Capitol, which was really neat. And as part of that ceremony, he brought the mother of someone who had overdosed and died,
mm-hmm.
and who'd been part of the ongoing conversations about the need for this legislation. Her son, if I remember correctly, I think was a wrestler and had a wrestling injury, and that led him down the path to addiction mm-hmm. and to overdose. And so the bill does a number of things. It provides additional resources to law enforcement to deal with the enforcement issues when appropriate. But I think one of the biggest things it does, and I talked about this a little bit before, is it strengthens the prescription process in terms of who's writing, how much is being prescribed, and who's it being prescribed to.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, we started tracking people buying Sudafed
right.
because the Sudafedrin was being used in the manufacture of meth. So now having some of these stronger tracking systems in place will help people from doctor shopping
mm-hmm.
And also let those doctors who would write those kinds of prescriptions understand that this is being looked at.
Right.
I think that to me is one of the bigger pieces of this legislation. And then there are a lot of other smaller parts of it as well, but the idea was to really take a step forward and out there to recognize this is a crisis. We are going to do something about it. And the state is on that path now, which
great.
Is great. I was very excited to be able to be a co-sponsor of that bill. It's especially knowing what we've got going on out here in Buncombe County.
What are you hoping to come out of this event this weekend? Is it awareness? Is it action?
For me, a successful panel would be someone who's in that room, who's either suffering from addiction or knows someone who is able to get them help and to save their life.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, to me, the greatest thing that could happen. Somebody walks out of there and says, my teenage daughter, my father, my uncle, my next door neighbor, doesn't matter who, that they say, you know what, this is going to give me the tools I need to get them the help they need. That would be a great goal. I had a town hall meeting at Anka Intermediate several months ago, when a lot of this debate was going on about the STOP Act, and she stood up and talked, gave her story about her family's addiction and her child's addiction, and she asked, "What can I do?" At the time, I wanted her to call on other legislators to pass this bill, but we also put her in touch with resources. There are nonprofit resources in the area that deal with like a Narcotics Anonymous and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the number one goal. The number two is I want to make sure that this stays in the forefront of everyone's mind. We, you know, a lot of times people say, we're gonna do something big, mm-hmm. and there's a big kickoff and there's a big hoo-ah about it, and then 6 months later, no one remembers what we did. No one's sure what we're doing. So I want to make sure that we're keeping this in the forefront of people's minds. And one thing that I think that we'll discuss, and I hope we discuss, is how we're handling access to treatment. And I want people to be aware that a lot of times insurance doesn't cover it. The state, and this is something that I'm very concerned about, while simultaneously promoting the STOP Act, has also reduced funding and support for mental health and substance abuse programs across the state. So our drug treatment facility in Black Mountain, they've been cut several millions of dollars. They're going to have to reduce the number of beds they have. Mm-hmm. That is a contradictory stance than what we're trying to do with the STOP Act. So we need to make sure that folks in the community are holding the state accountable for not just having the press conference about the STOP Act, but what are you actually doing to help support it? Yeah. And so that's one thing I want people walking out there understanding, is that they've got to keep the pressure on people like me, on other legislators, to say it's not just enough to have a fancy bill signing or to put up a cool poster. You've actually got to support this program if you want to make a difference.
Yeah. Are you aware of any other districts throughout the state that are doing these kind of panels or doing this kind of community interaction?
I'm not. I haven't heard of any, but...
Yeah. So this isn't a coordinated effort. This is something specifically for Buncombe.
And this is being put on by the Buncombe County Young Democrats, mm-hmm. where it's being organized by them.
Yeah.
But it's not a Democratic event.
Right.
I'm hoping to talk to the organizers a little bit about, in the future when we're looking at these types of things, is there a way to engage the Buncombe County Young Republicans?
Mm-hmm.
And so that we can make sure that there is a bipartisan effort, because it's a... this extends beyond any kind of party boundaries.
Right, right.
And anytime we can find to let people know that we're not going to let ideology stand in the way of, you know, helping our community, we need to do that.
Right. Great. Any final thoughts?
I hope that people come out. Hope that people are able to participate and to learn and to listen. But I cannot emphasize this enough. It's that addiction is not about a moral failing. Addiction is not about being a bad person. It is a body chemistry issue. It is a dopamine body chemistry issue. Some people can use drugs and stop anytime, just like some folks can smoke cigarettes and stop anytime. Other folks, the moment they have that first cigarette, they're hooked. Some folks, the minute they have that first OxyContin, they're hooked. We need to move this away from being a conversation about people's moral failings and focus on the medical issue that it truly is.
Great. Well, I hope the event is a success. I hope there's a lot of people attending. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of great information, and maybe some folks can get some help if they need it.
And hopefully we'll get some new ideas on how to deliver that as well.
Yeah, great. Thanks for coming in today, Brian.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The panel will be held this Saturday, July 29th, beginning at 1:30 p.m. at the Anka Intermediate School in Candler. More information on the event can be found on the Buncombe County Young Democrats Facebook page. For Asheville FM NewsHour, this is Doug Klesch.